We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. I am Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jace and Pat. Jace, we have a special guest on with us today. It's longtime friend of the program, Cody Westerlund. Cody, thanks so much for joining us, dude. And we got some mildly fun stuff to talk about. I think since the last time we did a podcast, Bulls, big inspiring win over the New Orleans Pelicans, 114-106 on Sunday. They followed that up with perhaps their worst performance of the season, losing to the league worst Detroit Pistons, 105-95 at home. The Bulls have now provided the Pistons two of their nine wins on the year, a totally flat, pathetic performance from the Bulls, defined by the worst three-point shooting performance in league history. I think the Bulls shot like 6% from three on about 29 attempts. It has essentially no team who's ever taken that many threes has hit so few in the regular season. So that was awful. And then the Bulls had a formidable Cleveland Cavaliers team on the second end of a back-to-back the following night. Sure felt like the Bulls were going to get their teeth kicked in, but instead the Bulls, down four rotation players, come back and give a gritty, resilient effort to overcome Javon Carter's inability to take a wide-open layup, end up going to double overtime. I hope he bought everyone dinner with that $7 million a year salary, because DeMar and Kobe did not each have to play 50 minutes in that game. If Javon Carter just takes the layup, he does not. Bulls still win in double overtime, 132-123, a game the Cavs absolutely pissed away. Just a ton of errors down the stretch for Cleveland. They fouled DeMar DeRozan on a three-point shot attempt at the end of regulation. It was just a lot of silliness from Cleveland, and, you know, credit the Bulls for fighting hard with so many injured guys. No Patrick Williams, no Torrey Craig. Alex Caruso was also out that game on his 30th birthday. Bulls somehow win. So now the Bulls are 28-31. Since their 4-15 start, guys, the Bulls are 23-17. That equates to a 47.5 win pace over the course of an 82-game regular season. Of course, we cannot simply wipe away the Bulls' poor start. They have to wear it around their neck and their shoulders the rest of the year and into the play-in tournament that will ultimately decide their fate. Jason, Cody, I feel like I go back and forth on either being super pissed off about this team or just like straight up apathy and like, who cares? I'm just going to watch college basketball as March Madness starts approaching. But I got to say, after I swore off the Bulls following the Celtics loss, I still found myself watching every minute of the Pelicans game. I made a big show out of telling my fiance, Stace, I'm not going to watch the Bulls the rest of the year, baby. We're good to go. Screw the Bulls. They're finished. I then watched every second of the Pelicans game. I watched a little bit of the Pistons game, and I watched pretty much the entire Cavs game. So after watching that Cavs game, I kind of just felt like, wow, maybe we should be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, maybe we should show a little bit more respect to the players on the roster. Once again, overcoming a disastrous front office, a totally apathetic ownership, to at least, you know, like, have some pride in themselves and in the team and, you know, give a nice little performance. We also have, and I hope I'm not butchering his first name again, we also have essentially the NBA debut for newly signed Turkish wing Onalap Batum balled out. I called it an 80th percentile Patrick Williams game. He had 10 points and 6 rebounds. He was diving on the floor. He was throwing passes on his butt. He was hitting threes. He was doing it all. Steph Noah did a nice little breakdown of his performance today on his Twitter feed. So that was me rambling for a while. Cody, I'm going to kick it to you. Have we been too hard on the Bulls? And should we show, you know, some admiration for the way the players have been kind of fighting? And God, don't say compete. Don't say compete. Don't say compete.
I was going to say compete.
Competing throughout the season after the slow start.
We have not been too hard on the Bulls as an organization. And I think everything in this season, especially once the trade deadline has passed in many ways and how pivotal that was and what the Bulls didn't do as they stood pat, everything by way of criticism toward them is justified, and it is not too hard. I'm with you on the players thing, right? Like, both of these things can be true. Like, Andre Drummond's just playing his ass off every night. You know, like, Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu, obviously Kobe hasn't shot the ball very well lately the last couple of games, but, like, these guys are laying it all out there. DeMar does, too. So I hear you there, but no, this is a locked and loaded play-in team that is almost, I should say, probably going to get eliminated on one of the first couple days of the play-in. And best case scenario, you guys know, like, this is a gentleman's sweep best case scenario in a first round 1-8 matchup for the Bulls. So I don't ever think it's over the top to talk about this, because you just, when you're not competing for anything more than an 8 seed, the season at hand really doesn't matter that much. And we'll always get back to the front office and what's next, because we have so much evidence and proof that this core does not work together. And part of the core is injured. Part of the core is disgruntled, basically. So, no, never over the top. The only issue I'll take with anything you've said so far, Ricky, is the team, way better rebounder than Patrick Williams already. I only needed to see 27 minutes to realize that. The guy drew like 2 fouls on rebounds too. He easily could have had like 8 or 9 rebounds if they just let him go out there and bowl over some people and not have people knock him over too. So I was impressed with how hard he played in hit a couple 3-pointers. I thought he rebounded well and was generally okay on defense. So that was good.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's start with him before any of the big picture stuff in last night's game. He had, 10 points, 6 boards. There was he went to the floor and like that overtime grabbing that rebound and all that fun stuff. So, he's got to just play. Like, at this point, you sign him to that deal. You got to just play in big minutes. He played, 27?
And overtime, too.
Yeah, plus 16, I think. Obviously, single game plus minus can be a thing. But, like, he played well, and Bulls played well with him on the court. I think he played during a lot of that fourth quarter comeback, and as you mentioned, the overtimes. Play the guy. Like, I don't know much about him. I haven't done much scouting. Other people have watched more of him, but, like, I know, like, our guy Lero has been talking him up in, like, our group chat, you know, and he can shoot a bit, like, decent numbers shooting in Turkey, and we saw it. He was 2 for 2 for 3 last night. He could do a little handling. He said hustling a bit, so, like, you might as well just, like, play him a ton. Like, as we talked about, like, the season just doesn't really matter this much anymore, so, like, play the guy 25, 30 minutes. And I'm glad that Billy finally did it. Like, I wonder if because they signed him, now they're like, all right, he's going to play. Like, so might as well just play him. Like, the injuries.
That's what gets me. That is just comical. He could have played at any point of the season on the two-way deal. He could have played 50 times, and they played him twice on the two-way deal. And then they officially elevate him to a standard contract, which is probably flexibility for potential trade matching purposes in the summer, most likely. But that kind of opens up the window. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, right? Because Alex Caruso being out was a big reason why he's playing. It hasn't usually been the case for the Bulls that Patrick Williams, Torrey Craig, and Alex Caruso are all out. And he kind of slides in and fits that mold of what? Yeah. Just guys that are generally 6 foot six-ish out there. And otherwise, you got 100 centers and 100 guards or point guards out there if he's not playing. So that was his opportunity. But yes, you make the point, like they could have used him a bit more at other points if they wanted to earlier in the year.
Yeah, I mean, and especially with, I mean, DeMar is playing 40. DeMar and Kobe, obviously, they don't play exactly the same positions, but like, these guys have been playing 40 minutes a night for the last 3 months. And like, I think we might be finally starting to see that wear on Kobe a bit. DeMar, I mean, DeMar was 8 of 26, and he grifted his way to a million free throws, including that those game-time free throws. But, like, DeMar's DeMar. Who knows if he's going to break down? But, like, Kobe, it seems like, might be slowing down a bit playing with all this, just the biggest minutes load of his life. And he's been in a slump. I know Kobe's gone through slumps before, but I do worry about him just – I've been trying to push the most improved player thing. But, like, if he's going to slump the rest of the year because he's been playing 40 minutes a night for 3 months. But, like, I mean, even – I mean, Caruso's played big minutes – I was playing huge minutes. Like, you might as well give the team a little, even when these guys, some of these guys are healthy, like, you might as well see what you got with them to just save some of the other guys as well.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, right? Like, for reporters who cover these games in person at home, like myself, it's just so much of the same for so much of the year. So, like, I found it refreshing for the team to just be so thankful for his opportunity that he got it. Like, it's one of the things where you can roll your eyes at a lot of things in the NBA through the years because you see it all the time. But it's one of the few things that I feel like it's really the most genuine thing really about people is when they do get that first opportunity. And I felt like we saw it a lot when the Bulls first started their rebuild under Garpax in 2017 because they cycled in so many guys as like the 15th man and fringe roster players and 10-day contracts at the end of those seasons and such. But yeah, it's cool. I don't know if it means anything in the big picture for OB, as the most of the team calls him, with the team, for what his role will be in the future. But there's no reason not to figure out a little bit more as this season goes and then play it by ear in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when they announced the signing, I had never heard of him, like most people. I looked up his stats, I watched some highlights, and I thought, hey, this is a good guy to take a flyer on. He's the right size for a wing. He's a pretty good shooter. He seems pretty athletic. He won 2 dunk contests in Turkey. You can't be out dunking all the Turks and not be athletic. So he passed whatever sensibility test I had to give them. And it was fun to watch him last night. I was going to bring up the interview, and you brought that up, Cody, before I could ask you, but the interview, I almost thought he was going to start crying. I mean, it was so genuine. It was so awesome. And you could just see the emotion flowing out of him.
It was interesting because he was extremely emotional, like you said, for the first minute or two, had a couple more questions. And then like the last question or two, like the last minute of the interview, it's like, oh my God, did he have a personal one-on-one preparation session with AK? Because he kept talking about competing like 4 or 5 times, like, we're gonna compete, this is what we do, we're players, that's what, how I'm wired, stuff like that. So that made me chuckle a little bit. I'm like, he's perfect AK guy right there.
And speaking of competing, Cody, this game was all the more reason that the Bulls should have traded Alex Caruso at the trade deadline, which to me is the most unforgivable sin of the season. I believe the Bulls are now 2-0 without Caruso post-trade deadline. They beat the Hawks in a game that immediately followed the trade deadline, and then they won this game. So they might have played more games without him post-trade deadline. That's just off the top of my head. But, you know, when we talk about like where this team should go and what they should do, I think most people realize like they're just in a fucking tough spot where they're currently at. But this season does not have any upside, as you laid out, Cody, when you made your first comments on this episode. You know, best case scenario is you're losing in 5 to the Celtics, and even the chances of that happening are pretty slim because you'd have to win 2 playing games. Where the Bulls could have given their fans some hope for the future is by recouping some future assets to trade Caruso, who is at the peak of his value. Very similar to the Bulls not trading DeRozan last year at the trade deadline when, you know, another team could have had him for two rounds. And I just felt like watching this game was all, it just made me pissed off again. Like, how do you not trade Caruso? Caruso's excellent. He's so awesome. In a better world, Caruso is like an all-time Bulls legend on the level of Joakim Noah for his heart, his hustle, his everything.
His grit.
But unfortunately, we do not live in a better world. We live in our current melting climate where the Bulls, you know, are at best a 500 team. They won't even be a 500 team. They suck. They're hopeless. No one gives a shit. And everyone can see that besides for the guy who actually makes the decisions, and that's AK. So, you know, Caruso was clearly at the high point of his value. We've had a little birdie in our ear telling us the details of what the Warriors may have offered the Bulls. Seemed like a great package to me. It seems like something the Bulls should have taken. They didn't, and Caruso's still on the team. And that win without him against a very good Cavs team just made me mad all over again that, you know, Arturas had no foresight in terms of getting rid of him. So
it was a delusional decision. There's no other way to put it, both for Caruso and Andre Drummond. And I think Caruso was the one not making that move that was more meaningful because he would have returned something good. And I mean, do tell if you want, but seems like the Warriors had some sort of first round pick and a young player on the table for Alex Caruso. Perhaps even more, I don't know, but it's been pretty well detailed and things I've heard and things we've read and everything that it would have made a lot of sense for the Bulls to trade Alex Caruso to the Warriors. And I made the point too, like, does AK just not understand the general dynamics of how a few things work in the league? I go back to him giving Billy Donovan a contract extension when Billy still had like 2 years left on his original deal. You don't have to give coaches a contract extension until they have one year left on their deal. You know what I mean? You don't have to throw a player option on the back end of every single role player's contract that you sign to your organization. And this is just another one. Like, you trade a guy like Alex Caruso, who's ready-made for a playoff contender to a team with Steph Curry, you do it for the good of the NBA because it's better if Alex Caruso's in Golden right. State trying to help Steph win a title, and it's better for you a year or two from now to be good at basketball, and that's how the cycle works. It's the entire life cycle and ecosystem of the NBA, and he's just standing there doing nothing, just stuck in neutral, apparently doesn't understand just these basic concepts. It was time to trade Caruso. You compare it to the DeRozan situation last year. I can understand like standing pat at like one trade deadline cycle or like hanging on a little too long a cycle or two, but we are well into these transaction windows when they should have moved on and done something and they haven't. So that to me is, as you said, I think the unforgivable part. And then Andre Drummond clearly was going to be worth at least 2 and maybe 3 second round picks from the 76ers. But he is here, Ricky, and he helped them beat the Grizzlies like on trade deadline night. And he certainly helped them beat the Cavs just the other night at the United Center. So he's single-handedly just keeping them in 9th place in the East instead of 10th at times, it feels like. So all of that is delusional because they still would have been in the play-in, like you said, whether these guys are here or not, because the back of the East stinks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Yeah, Drummond has legitimately won them probably like three or four games. There was that Hawks game that he started that he had like a 20-20 game. Like they don't win that game without him doing that. And then last night, you mentioned that Grizzlies game. He was the Timberwolves game. He beasted then that in that big comeback. Obviously, that a lot of that was Kobe, but Drummond was also huge against Rudy Gobert down the stretch of that game. So like three or four Andre Drummond games where he's like basically like every third or fourth game, he looks like a Hall of Famer. And obviously, he's one of the best rebounders of all time. He calls himself that, but like, I mean, he's legitimately awesome right now. The stat was out there that he's averaging like 18 rebounds a game as a starter. And that's like the most since Rodman in like 1995. Like the guy has been, he's playing his ass off. Like I was at all credit to the, like some of these players, like the team that they have like in place has like a lot of likable guys
to root for.
So like with Drummond, the way he's been playing, like DeMar is obviously just a pro's pro, and like he does all the mental health stuff, which is great. And then Kobe, we love Kobe, love Io as an Illinois guy and the Chicago dude. It's like the team is pretty likable. It's just, all the ire should be at the front office for just their paralysis and three straight deadlines of doing nothing. The off seasons have been barely anything either. So it's like, it's just such an unfortunate situation because like we're just like, it is finding itself in a hard spot. Like last night, like was like a feel good win, but then you're just like, it's like, oh, like let's, what does it really mean? It means nothing. And like, you know, like the Cavs obviously choked. So like it was kind of, the Cavs should have won that game. But I mean, the Bulls are fighting. They, the competing meme is like, it's totally legit. Like they compete basically every night. They don't really lay many eggs. The Pistons game was the first like really bad game they've played in a while. Like they don't really get blown out much. Like the Celtics game, like they were up at half and the Celtics blow out almost everybody. You don't blame them for that game. Like they're so shorthanded, but they are competing. So it's like, it's such a joke, honestly. But like, it's like, you do want to root for these guys to do well. I do also rooting for them because I have money on the line for the over 37.5. So like I need them to get to 38, and I'm pretty confident they're going to do it even with some tough games coming up because they're competing every night and they pull out all these close games. Like their clutch stats are insane for like the team that they are. Like it's honestly unbelievable how good they are. They've been in the clutch this year. So it's like, it is such as like a, like, do I care? Like, but do I root for them? Or am I upset about what's going on? Like, all of it, it kind of comes back to apathy. Apathy sometimes was what the front office has done, but like they have been gritty. They've been fighting hard. They've been hashtag competing and competitive in a lot of these games. I looked at I was looking between some stuff out the last couple of days, just looking at like the season, and it's kind of been broken into quarters like perfectly. Like the first quarter of the season, disaster. Second quarter of the season, Kobe White was awesome. They kind of got back into it. In this last quarter of the season, they're 10-10. Since they moved to 18-21, going into the Ring of Honor night, the infamous Ring of Honor night, they're 10-10 since that game. They're like, their net rating is like zero in that stretch. Like they're the most mid team, but honestly, that's way better than they should be with like all these injuries. Like they should not be where they are, and they still kind of are because they've, and I think 15 of those 20 games have been clutch games. Like literally almost every game is coming down to the wire. So like we can only really laugh at this point with where they're at.
There's a lot of things that don't always make sense with this team because they have been really solid in clutch time, obviously. But yeah, everyone just yells about the last possession of every single game because they don't. It's like we got spoiled the first year DeMar was here. Everyone thought you just hit a button and he automatically makes a game-winning shot at the buzzer inside the final 5 seconds. So the team has been well organized, it feels like, for most of clutch situations until it comes down to the final possession. And that's uplifted them in so many ways in some games that they shouldn't have won. And that's what happens when you have a guy like DeMar, who can methodically read the floor, is willing to draw two and share it, and can draw fouls so well, isn't a high turnover guy usually. So stuff like that kind of makes sense. But again, like there's just so many players on this team that don't have enough upside either, or will be asked to do more than they should. And that's okay in the prism of the rest of the season, but they're going to have to find a way to get out of that cycle sometime this summer. And I'll be interested to see what the goal is. And like, I would like to get at some point Michael Reinsdorf to speak again on the record to reiterate what his vision is, because right now we know Jerry's trying to put together a new stadium for the White Sox and isn't going to be having much on his finger on the pulse of the Bulls by way of big things right now. So to me, it's like, what does Michael Reinsdorf want? Because if it is the 8 seed, AK is fulfilling his vision exactly. But to me, I have to take AK at his word when he directly says the front office supports me and what decisions I want to make, when that's what it matches behind the scenes from what I've heard, right? Like, I have not heard from anyone that ownership told AK, you have to go chase the 8 seed. To me, it's like they did that work. The hay was in the barn when they hired him. They found the man that would already do that for them years ago. And this is how he's wired. And there's really no other way to explain what his vision is right now, other than that's how he's wired. He wants to compete. He can't stand the thought of being the worst team or worst five team in the NBA. But there's some red flags there too in that trade deadline press conference when people asked him about money and financials and spending and being up against the luxury tax potentially this offseason and how that factors into Patrick Williams headed for restricted free agency, DeMar to unrestricted free agency. And he's like, yeah, that's a problem for later. Like, no, like, come on. That's like what you'd say to your kid when you need dinner later or something. Like, that's a problem for later. We'll just go to McDonald's or something. Like, are you kidding me?
Foresight is part of the job, man. Like, you always need to be looking ahead.
That's literally what you got to do. So yeah. I'm not sitting here acting like no one in the Bulls front office has that plan. Like, JJ Polk is their salary cap expert and was influential in all the moves and sign and trades they made when they originally overhauled the team in dramatic fashion in 2021. So, like, they have these things in their head, but it doesn't feel like AK at least is comfortable with them or grasping the importance at all times of what the future holds and how the present affects the future.
Right. AK seems like he's going to throw a fucking parade if they get the 8 seed. Like, he is going to be so self-satisfied and say, we did it. I did it. This team did not make the playoffs for 9 years before I came over, which is false. You know, it was 4 years or whatever it was, and he got it wrong at the post-trade deadline press conference. But he's going to be fucking loving himself. So proud.
He says he owes it to the fans. Have you found a fan in Chicago yet who cares about the 8 seed?
Well, that's the thing, Cody, and this is what I keep coming back to. I have a clip on my computer from Media Day this year that I tweeted out months ago, but in it, AK says, you know, Chicago, it's not the type of city that'll let you rebuild. And it seems like to our tourists, the city wants a competitive team. Maybe he heard this when he was hired, when the Bulls were fucking laughingstock led by Jim Boylan. And now he seems to have this belief that as long as the team is competing, the fan base is cool with where the team is at. And he can point to the attendance. He can point to, you know, was it that Timberwolves game, I think, you know, they were going, the whole crowd was going crazy.
Yep.
And
I mean, you know, last night, too.
The conversation online where some people be like, well, this is the fans' fault. The fans shouldn't give any money to Reinsdorf. And it's my thing on that is like, it's like, no, dude, it's like, you know, sports takes your mind off all the shitty stuff in life. And you can't blame the fans for wanting to go support their favorite team and be happy when they win. It is your job, Arturis, to think about things beyond what's immediately in front of the team today. You need to be thinking about the big picture. You need to realize that competing does not mean having a coin flip chance to win or lose every game. It means competing for a championship. And the fact of the matter is that this team's present is way better than their future, and their present sucks. No one likes their present. No one's satisfied by a team that has the upside to get their ass kicked in the first round of the playoffs. And God, this is as good as it's going to get. Like, DeMar's falling down the age curve. Are they going to be able to bring back Andre Drummond next year?
Probably not.
I don't think they are. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's valor and dignity in avoiding total rebuilds, right? Like the Indiana Pacers.
I'm not team tank.
Never competed for like the bottom three seeds in the NBA or whatever. They always try to just turn the roster over on the fly as an example of another team. But to do that, you can only do that if you have the foresight to understand that maybe you have to trade Zach LaVine after his first year of his mega deal, or you have to trade DeMar DeRozan with a year and a half left on his contract, or you have to trade Alex Caruso with a year and a half left on his contract, because otherwise you're always going to be stuck in whatever state of mediocrity you are in generally in that given time. So you can only avoid total rebuilds if you are creative and willing to turn the roster over as you go gradually on the fly. And the Bulls, AK just hasn't wanted that. And it's the rebuild thing too. Like, that's fine. Like, if you want to avoid it, but I don't understand. The city loved the Bears rebuilding. The Blackhawks rebuild obviously got lucky and went to perfection too, but this team loved the Cubs result from rebuilding, or the city loved the Cubs result.
And you can protect your job a little bit sometimes. Yeah. So, hey, we're rebuilding. We're going to suck for a year or two. Like, here's what's going to happen. So like, I mean, maybe with this front office, it doesn't matter. Like, he'll just keep his job for a long time, no matter what.
Also, dude, just trade Caruso and Drummond, and your team is still
the stuff about this. Yeah, the stuff he talked about, like, he's just like unwilling to take like any type of step back, and it wouldn't even been that much of a step back. As we said, like, they're going to be the 9 seed. Like, with those guys, without them, they'll probably end up as the 9. Like, will they be a little worse overall? Yes, but like, he's just like no willingness to take any type of step back to maybe make the future better. It's just, that's just weird. Like, I said, there is valor in like not tanking and whatever, trying to compete, but like, just the stubbornness to not like even be able to take a small step back to maybe get better in the future. I mean, with like the, you mentioned the Pacers, like, they were willing to make a trade. They traded an all-star big man to get Tyrese Halliburton, and now look at Tyrese Halliburton. Like, opportunistic trade of that worked out for both teams. And they, instead of tanking, they now have one of the best point guards in the NBA who's really young. Like, are the Bulls going to make any trades like that? Like, there's like, the Zach LaVine trade is probably going to be awful whenever it does happen. Like,
I was going to say, like, the only way out of this is like a Zach LaVine trade, but you're just not going to sell him for much this summer, certainly. Given that he's coming off the foot surgery now. So to me, that's difficult. That's the one spot where you would see like, get a role player or maybe two back in a Zach LaVine trade that helps you take a step forward as a team, whether that's an established veteran role player, whether that's a youngster who can be in your rotation. Like, that's just going to be really hard to pull off, it feels like. And that feels like, to me, we'll have to like round back on these trade possibilities and who has cap space and such after the playoffs are done and everything, because there's always fallout from that. Someone loses early, someone gets unhappy and wants out. But to me, that it's just really hard to see the path for how they turn it over too much this summer to be better next year for the Bulls.
And I don't think they want to be better. All they want to do is make the playoffs. And if AK makes the playoffs this year, he's going to say, I did it. I'm the king. Worship me. We were in such a bad situation before I came here. We made the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. I am untouchable. I am a god. And he will truly believe this about himself, while anyone with half a brain will realize this man is a delusional idiot.
It is not hard to build a playoff team in the NBA. Like, 53% of the teams make the playoffs.
And especially with the play-in now. Like, the Bulls
are in the East.
The Bulls,
it's not like you're going against Wemby and Luka every night. You're going against freaking Trae Young and Mikal Bridges.
I've talked about this before. Like, the play with the way the play-in set up, like, I mean, they're five games out of the 8 seed. Like, the Bulls probably, like, that the 9 and 10 teams, like, should not feel like qualify for the play-in if you're 5 games. They did that the first time they had the play-in, remember, in the bubble. I think you had to be like 3 or 4 games back of the 8 to like get that. Like, I feel like they should bring that back. They won't do it. They love having these extra games and having these teams try to compete. But like, if the Bulls end 5 games out as like the 9 seed, like, they have no business getting that chance to get it, to get in, to become the 8 seed. Like, I know they'd have to win 2 games, but like, I mean, they're like 3 or 4 games back. The 10 seed right now in the West is what, the Lakers or the Warriors, and they're like 4 games over 500. The Bulls are the 9 seed and they're 3 games under. Like, the Bulls would be 3 or 4 games back in the 10 seed if they were in the West, but they're in the shitty East. and they're three games under 500. They're going to get a chance to make the eight seed, but for like, and that's just nothing to be excited about.
You know, the Bulls are going to be locked in like a tie game, 87-87, with 5 minutes to play.
It's in Orlando.
Oh yeah, in for the eight seed though. We know that's coming.
Yes,
which is just what happened last year too against the Heat. They were tied with 4 minutes left, and the Heat ended up going to the finals. And Arturis convinces himself that this could have been us. We could have been in the finals.
Never mind everything else about
so
that Heat team.
Stupid! It's crazy. It's crazy how delusional this guy is.
Looking at the team they bring back next season. Like, we're assuming that it's DeMar's back, right? They're going to re-sign him, probably. Would you
probably guess, that would be my.
What would you give DeMar?
What would I give DeMar? I would probably give him 2 years. I don't know. I would rather give him somewhere in the lower mid 50s, but I'm sure in my scenario here, it'd be 2 years, $60 million or something. And I think the argument in that negotiation will be on the third year, right? I think the Bulls should hold steady to 2 years on DeMar's
match
next
him up
contract.
With Vooch. I mean, Vooch shouldn't have gotten
Vooch last year. They should have given Vooch 2 years, and they gave him 3 years, and Vooch now can't make a shot at any point on the floor. So why would Arturis win this negotiation when he's never won one? DeMar's going to get 3 years because Arturis can't negotiate.
Because DeMar, I mean, he's earned the money. Like, we've talked about this. DeMar has, like, earned his next contract. And, like,
you don't pay for past performance.
Like, you don't, yeah, right, exactly. Like, he's going to be 35 or whatever, and, like, the team is where they're at, mediocre. And, like, a mediocre team should not be paying a 35-year-old.
I wonder if he'll get, like, $25 million on a third year, and like half of it's guaranteed and half of it's not, right? Like, if they give him a fully guaranteed third year,
I did it with Vooch.
They did, but I mean, DeMar's going to be a tad older than Vooch at that point, right? If I'm doing my math here, right?
Couple years, I think,
on everything. Yeah, so that will be a really fascinating contract because. At least if you just give him two, cut it there, you can claim again, we're going to compete for the eight seed for two more years and then turn it over. And that's not going to make Riggy happy. He's still shaking his head here. Doesn't make anyone happy, but like, at least it's just not completely, at least there's a logic in having some of these guys' contracts end at the same time, at least.
Yeah. I would also think there would be a logic in trying to keep your pick next year, which is top 10 protected to San Antonio, a horrible bit of negotiating on Arturis' part to pay out a first round pick for a free agent just to get rid of a bad contract, which he took in the Vucevic trade. And I believe that was Al-Farouq Aminu.
Yes, it was.
I like how he threw 2 second round picks in that Spurs trade too, I think, for DeMar, if I'm right. Two.
Just insane.
I can't Arturis remember exactly, but.
Oh, so bad. Yes. Cody, they're going to want to bring back Drummond because Drummond's awesome. And just like Caruso, in a better world, we are loving Andre Drummond. Oh, he's a Chicago Bulls icon.
He's a hero on a 50-win team.
He rocks, dude. Drummond kicks ass. He is perhaps the second best backup center in the NBA, perhaps behind Isaiah Hartenstein. And, you know, he's probably the best. Is he the best player on a veteran minimum in the entire league?
I'd have to think, but I have another one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, he's given great value. That's for sure.
That was a good signing by AK.
Yeah.
And AK is going to want to bring him back.
I have to retract my don't give guys player options. If Andre Drummond's going to pick up $3 million player options to average 14 and 18 when he starts, that was well done.
Yeah. So what do you think happens with Drummond? Do you think they're going to try to bring him back? Do you think it's reasonable that they could?
I think he'll go somewhere where he can start more often because he's been so open and honest about how he feels he's still a starting caliber center in the NBA, and he's certainly playing like it. And he's been – I thought when they first signed him and he said some of those things, and then it was the first year, it wasn't always like the smoothest in by way of like versatility and stuff. Like, they put him in pick and roll sometimes. Guys would run around him for layups, and it's like, how big of an effect do you have? But then as the year went on, he had a good season. He's having a phenomenal season this year. Like, to me, I thought there was a potential for him to be grumpy, and he's never been like that. He just says, I think I'm a starter, handles his business terrific. But I just think he would want to go to a situation where he can continue to prove that. Like, he loves calling himself like the greatest rebounder in the NBA right now, and one of them greatest of all time. Like, I think chasing some rebounding numbers means something to him too, you know? And I think he just, that opportunity for him makes sense elsewhere. The money he would command, like, the Bulls have been overpaying Vooch, obviously, and overpaid assets to acquire him. But, like, to me, the center positions just befuddled me. You can't sit there and start sinking like $30 million into center position.
Hey, maybe they'll start both of them next season. The two big lineup, just get it rolling.
I'm pretty sure those two guys are exactly like 0.0 or 0.1 on the floor together this year. So if you want to go 41 and 41 and get the eight seed, you should start the double
big. Great NBA basketball in 2024 is the Vooch Drummond front court. So it's worked sometimes.
What, do you think he'll be back, Ricky? I mean, I think Drummond will get
what's he going to get? We were talking about this in our other chat before, too. Like the taxpayer MLE? Will someone use cap space on him? Like, a full MLE? Like, I don't know. Like, with the way the center position is, it is weird. Like, I feel like the best guys get huge deals, and then, like, obviously Vooch just got his whatever the hell he got. But, like, I mean, the fact that Drummond is on, like, I thought he was washed, honestly. Like, I did not love the signing when it happened. Like, it seemed like he was just kind of a goofball, would make a lot of mistakes. And he still has his moments where he fumbles the ball away and, like, misses dunks and shit. But, like, for the minimum, he's been great. So, yeah, like, it is weird how guys get paid as center. So, like, with this, like, resurgence in his career, like, I do wonder, like, what's his market will be like.
I mean, I'm thinking, like, 2-year deal for, like, $20 million or something. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here on the spot, but that he'll want a multi-year deal, I think, and look for a total that.
And with the Bulls, their salary situation, we talk about bringing back DeMar. I mean, if they're giving DeMar big money, and then the Pat situation, like, how much is he getting? Is he going to take the qualifying offer? Will they have to match something? Will they come to an agreement? Like, there is the luxury tax. I mean, this, we know the ownership's not going to pay luxury tax for this mediocre team. So, like, they could easily get, even if Drummond wants to stay, like, if someone else is going to offer him money, whether it's a good team, whether it's a team where he just starts, like, he's probably gone, which is why
they'd have to be off Zach LaVine's contract somehow Andre Drummond to come back. And I don't know how the timeline, you'd have to trade Zach LaVine around the draft probably in that case, or have a trade.
They also got to dump Javon Carter and his $6 or $7 million.
Oh, you led this off with him passing up the layup, Ricky. The other one I love, he ran that loose ball down in the second half near the hoop that he needed to shoot at. And I will admit, his momentum was taking him out of bounds. So he kind of, like, rounded to the corner and passed to a teammate. But, like, if Io runs that ball down, that layup's going up immediately, even if his momentum's taking him past. So he actually passed up, like, two wide open layups he could have had in the game.
He sucks. I thought that was a good sign.
I thought
it was good, too.
Yeah, I like the signing. He hasn't shot. Like, he shot so well with the Bucks last year, and he can't make anything now. Like, he's small. Like, he's, like, a hard-nosed defender. Like, sometimes he just gets bully ball because he's so small. So it's, like, it just hasn't worked out. They got to get off that deal. What is it, $7 million or something? Like, I don't know. Like, you're probably not going to get anything. Like, maybe you can get a second for, like, a team that thinks they can rehab him or something. But, like, if they're going to have to clear space, if they want to re-sign Drummond or give DeMar a big deal, or give Pat, move him. So Patrick Williams, let's move to Patrick Williams real quick here. Like, his situation, like, what the fuck, man? Like, what do you do with Patrick Williams?
I bring him back. I bring him back probably on a 4-year deal.
How much?
Not letting him. 4-year, what, $70 million ish, something?
I said $460 million, and when we talked about after the injury, it would seem fine. Like,
470,
fine. Sure.
Don't let him go. Like, I think he's a very good off ball defender. You just got to keep guys like that. I know he's disappointed offensively, and he's stuck on averaging 9 or 10 points every year. But just stop comparing him to being the number 4 overall pick in the draft, and stop. Every time you look at Patrick Williams, don't say I missed out on Tyrese Halliburton. Look at him and see if he can help your team win in some sort of role. So I bring him back, no doubt. Like, I don't see anyone out there going to give Pat Williams 4 years and $100 million.
Pistons,
right? Like
Troy
that
Weaver.
That would be the concern. Troy Weaver could do anything, but hopefully he'll still be falling in love with centers at that point or something and not having the money. But I don't know what you guys do with him. Like, I would try to play hardball with him, obviously, because it's restricted free agency. So wait him out or whatever. But
I think that's what they'll do. I would guess they lowball him, say, go get an offer sheet. If it doesn't happen, maybe he signs the qualifying offer, which is like 12 or 13 million, approve it season if he has a nice season. But there is risk there. I mean, he's had multiple big injuries in his career and he's missed time. So like
he might not play. It's possible that he's not going to be ready for the start of next season.
So, yeah,
into this injury.
Serious injury.
There's a large variance of outcomes.
The navicular, whatever it's called.
Williams injury. Yeah. I think it's kind of on the table that he doesn't play next year. I think that
we should just assume that now with Alonzo Ball.
0% chance that happens. So for Pat, if you were to offer him, let's say, the Kobe deal.
Yeah.
4 years, $40 million. Is Pat really going to turn that down to take a
Kobe's three years deal? 3 years for Kobe.
Yeah, I think Kobe's same idea though.
Yeah,
let's go 4 years, $40 million. Let's say, you know, if Pat, you know, instead his other option is the qualifying offer. I mean, if he doesn't play, or if he plays and gets hurt again, or if he doesn't take a big jump up, like, is he going to have another $40 million contract on the table after that year? Then he's probably taking another prove it deal. So I kind of think the Bulls could be in a decent position to play hardball with him. I hate this for Patrick's sake, but this is the position the Bulls have put themselves in because they won't trade anyone and they are terrible at negotiating. I kind of wonder, is there a chance they let Pat go to bring back Drummond? I think this would be really dumb, but Arturis has proven himself to be nothing but a gigantic moron since he's taken the job. And there are all these rumors on Casey Johnson's Bulls Talk podcast that, like, we might move off Pat when they were 4-15. They were, like, not super pleased with Pat. His numbers are exactly the same. I think he's gotten better. I really like Patrick Williams. I think he's what you need from a four, which is a really good defender who can make a wide-open three. Of course he leaves you wanting more, of course, but he's still very young. I would love to bring back Patrick Williams on a multi-year deal. I am kind of worried that the Bulls will choose to bring back Drummond and DeRozan over Pat because they are stupid. Am I crazy here?
I wouldn't call you crazy in anything. I mean, Casey's as well-sourced as it gets, you know what I mean? So, but I would still be very surprised by that, right?
That's what I
just because I mean he was AK's first draft pick.
Yep.
He doesn't again, like, even if you're signing him to a deal, and let's just say he does get healthy in some form, like, and he is somewhat disappointing, like, he can still be a sixth man playing like 24 minutes a game or something. Like, I don't feel like this is a situation where you're signing a guy to a long-term deal and he's like nearly unplayable and you're bad because you're playing him or anything. So I'm with you. Like, just like, this team just needs more guys who are at least average on both ends and fit the modern NBA a little better. So I'm so frustrated by Pat Williams' lack of rebounding. He's had a few spurts, and again, you can pick out any five-game sample you want and say he did better, but there's just so many moments and so many games still where if you watch closely, it's frustrating that he isn't doing more there. So, like, that's my huge concern with him. Like, I'm not so concerned whether he averages 10 points or 15 points a game because I do think you can make that up elsewhere a little bit more. But I think he brings some of those other things that they need and miss. And like you said, like, defense, this team just lacks length. It lacks guys who, other than Caruso and Pat Williams, it feels like can really turn teams over. Like, you saw it, like, Caruso was out and the Bulls bludgeoned the Cavs to death on the glass, but they didn't force many turnovers for most of that game against the Cavs. So they need guys like Pat Williams who can do that. And like, your injury point is great and it's difficult, right? Because it's hard to get true information out of this team. They always say someone's out 6 to 8 weeks to start, and then it's like 6 months later, and you don't know if they're going to be able to play still, or in Lonzo Ball's case, 2+ years there. So it could be far worse, like you said, Ricky, in that case. But if you do, generally speaking, get a clean bill of health back when it's time to go to restricted free agency, I think bringing him back on a four-year deal would be good. If there are serious flags and concerns on the medical, your deal certainly makes way more sense than what I proposed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
For sure. Speaking of Lonzo Ball, hey, maybe a setback, not sprinting, but then he self-lobbed a dunk to himself. So who knows what's happening there? Obviously, I don't want to get into Lonzo Ball too much, but because God knows what's actually going on there. But that did happen this week. Billy Donovan, AK never talks about Lonzo Ball. It's always Billy Donovan talking about what's going on with Lonzo Ball. So yeah, quick Lonzo Ball update there. Don't want to go too much longer here. Cody, I do want to ask you a little more optimistic here about our guy, Ayo Dosunmu, Illinois legend Ayo Dosunmu, who has been awesome for going on 2 months now, shooting basically like almost 50% from three. And the Bulls don't win the game last night without Ayo picking up in the fourth quarter, hit multiple threes. I think he had another basket late in regulation or OT, I can't remember which one it was, but bunch of points down the stretch. His three-point shooting, the team MVP apparently is Peter Patton because he's gotten several guys to just take huge strides from three other than Nikola Vucevic. But are you surprised how good Ayo has been these last couple months? And do you think what his upside is? Because obviously as an Illinois guy, we're both Illinois guys, like loved the pick, loved what he's shown as like in stretches and his career, but he was pretty bad last season. Like no doubt. Didn't love the contract they gave him. I thought it was kind of dumb. Like he's coming off a terrible year and you're giving him a 3-year deal, like more like, oh, AK like negotiating against himself again, like what the hell are you doing here? And to start of the year, he was okay. But these last 2 months, like with all these injuries, he's been playing huge minutes. He's shooting the shit out of the ball. Like he's obviously not going to shoot 45, 50% from three for the, that's going to even out a bit, but like he's been getting a ton of big shots, clutch threes, just threes in general, doing other things as well. Transition, we know he's great. So are you surprised at how good Ayo's been just these last couple months and just the big role that he's been playing?
Yeah, I mean, I am. Like you said, I mean, he's shooting on fire from behind three-point range for a long stretch, just shy of 41% for the year. Like, that's a huge deal if he replicates that moving forward in his career, not just for the Bulls, but certainly for him and his outlook in the NBA and contracts down the line and everything. But he's been even more aggressive in transition. And we've asked Billy Donovan a lot about Ayo a lot. And he's pointed out a few things. Like if you look back to his rookie year, I think like the best stretch he kind of had as point guard when he subbed in for Lonzo, like he was playing this two-man game with Vooch and they had some success and he had like these 10, 8 assist games, stuff like that. But it didn't feel like he understood all the chess pieces on the floor. And Billy's pointed out that he understands that a little bit better where everyone else is supposed to be and how his threat of driving to the hoop can affect where others go on the floor, how he draws the defense and where to kick it. So that comes with, you know, being in your third year in the NBA, but I've still been surprised by him. I think he's a lot less predictable than he was probably in his first 2 years in the NBA. Like if he got a screen on the right side at any point, he was going around, going to dribble to his right, try to beat everyone there. Now you see him turn down a screen a little bit more. You see him snake through screens and weave back to where he came from, stuff like that. So I think that matters. But yeah, I've been mildly surprised at not at his work ethic, not at his transition ability, not that he took some of those steps in understanding the floor, but just that shooting percentage, because he never fired away at a ridiculous 3-point clip at Illinois either. Most of his
right. A lot of mid-range
performance, a lot of mid-range, a lot of transition as well. So for him to do that has been awesome for him. A little bit surprising to me, and is probably one of the biggest reasons for hope for the Bulls, I think, moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping on Illinois really quick, how confident are you in Illinois actually getting out of the first weekend this year?
Super confident if they hang 105 in every single game. I'm terrified of the second round game, probably being another tough draw for Illinois, and then the Illinois defense allowing like 92 points, and can the Illini score 93 somehow?
Yeah, it's been a wild season. Like they were so good insane at the start of the year, and obviously all the Terrence Shannon stuff. But like their offense, I think they're like third in like KenPom offensive efficiency. But their defense, which was awesome to start the year, is like 100 now or something like that. They give up like 80, 90 every game. It makes it a little more fun. At least like the games are entertaining. I know when I went to Illinois, like I saw the 38-33 loss to, I think it was Penn State.
Penn State.
In person, like that was the worst sporting event I think I've ever seen in my life. So like at least now, like these games are whatever, 80-70 or 90-80. Like the game against Minnesota, they allowed like 70% 3-point shooting and won because they put up over 100. It's like absolutely crazy stuff. But like I can't get super confident because, I mean, they haven't made the second weekend since they went to the tournament final in 2005. But, I mean, they have the talent. They could absolutely go on a run because they can score the shit out of the ball. But
yeah, the team, in a weird way, I might even be slightly more confident than past years just because the team is so ridiculous. And, like, you know, there's always a few teams that get ridiculously hot at shooting the ball in the NCAA tournament. So the other problem is, I mean, at times we'll still be terrified if it's a tie game with two minutes to go in the game collapsed. And there's no point guard to organize sometimes to take care of the ball. Like we saw the mess at Penn State where a turnover or two just killed him at the end. So it'll be wildly entertaining though, because it's cool watching some of these teams throw up 100 points in college basketball.
It is fun. Ricky, real quick, what do you think of Illinois, Mr. College Basketball? How do you feel about them this season?
I don't know if I'm Mr. College Basketball, but I have been getting
whatever. Mr. Draft, you watch lately a decent amount of college basketball.
Totally, I've watched so much college basketball through the course of my career, and I'm getting into it again because guess what? I'm responsible for March Madness again, in addition to being responsible for the Super Bowl coverage and the NBA Finals coverage and just everything. So yeah, I'm getting into it. I'm all in lately. Illinois. It's kind of tough because I like almost don't want to talk about the team because of the Shannon allegations. And I thought Shannon was a tremendous player this year. Like how many times do you see a guy who in his fifth year is still getting so much better? He made a noticeable leap as a 3-point shooter. He's always so fast with the ball. Like you don't see guys that are as big and strong as he is and have like that level of elite speed with the ball and being college for 5 years. I think I put him in my mock draft in 2019 or 2020. Like he's just been a really good college player for a long time. Doesn't have much of an in-between game in my opinion, but like maybe he started to develop that a little bit too. I know everything was dropping for him against Minnesota, but he looked pretty good there. To me, it's like, is Coleman Hawkins going to hit a couple threes? If he does, they're probably going to win. And if he shoots 0 for 6, they're probably going to lose. And that's a very simplistic way to put it, but like they kind of need him to take threes. And defensively, you just wish he was a little tougher and a little better inside, I feel like. But that's just not the type of player he is. So they're just going to go spread and shred and try to play, you know, their approximation of four out or five out basketball and try to beat teams that way. So I don't know. I think they are a pretty good team. Every time I watch Illinois, I get mad that they ran out Pods. Like, Pods would have been the perfect player for them last year. And he probably wouldn't have been around this year because, you know, he's just obviously a pro and he's been so good as a rookie. But, like, to me, if I was an Illinois fan, that would drive me insane. Like, they needed a point guard so bad. They had this guy on campus. They took Sky Clark instead. They ran off Sky Clark because he didn't like his role or whatever the story was with that. And, like, this guy who you basically ran off, Pajemski, becomes a fucking stud immediately. So that's the main thing I think about when I watch Illinois. But in general, team's pretty solid. I'm excited to watch them play in March. And yeah, I mean, you know, the round of 32 is going to be very similar to the Bulls game against the Magic for the 8 seed.
That's right. Oh, God.
You can't watch any basketball game without thinking of some precursor to it or who should be there or this should have happened, whether it's the Illini, something else in college basketball, or whether, of course, it's the beloved Bulls in Chicago. Man.
Great stuff. We'll see. I got nothing else. Ricky, you have anything else? We'd probably wrap it up.
Jace.
We've been going for a while. Cody, thank you, as always, for joining us. I feel like you like always come on with us like right around this time of year. So thank you again for joining us, taking some time out.
No one better to react to a trade deadline no action other than me breaking down.
If for whatever reason you have not read Cody's great column for 6-7 to the score about AK being like the perfect Reinsdorf, whatever, general manager, president, whatever, vice president of basketball operations, please do go back and you can go get mad all over again, read the great column, just completely ripping them to shreds. So it was great stuff. So yeah, go check out his work. Bulls beat reporter for 670. If you have anything else you want to plug, Cody, right now, go ahead.
No, just tune in to 670 The Score anytime you want to hear some Chicago sports. That's all we need. I appreciate hopping on the podcast anytime with you guys. It's always fun.
Awesome. Thanks again, Cody. Yeah, that is going to do it for us here on this episode of Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Tons of great pods all across Blue Wire. I feel like what we're doing here. Check them all out. For us here at Cash, please rate and review us. Give us those 5-star ratings. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, all those fun places. You can follow me and Ricky on Twitter. I'm at Bulls_J. Ricky's at SBN_Ricky. Cody, I believe, is at Cody Westerlund, I believe, as well. So go follow him, too. Again, covering the Bulls for 670. And yeah, that's going to do it for us here. The Bulls coming up. They play the Bucks. Friday night, the Bucks played tonight. They beat the Hornets. The Bulls have played the Bucks. They've been competitive against the Bucks all season. So maybe we'll get another shockingly close game. Damian Lillard's had like the worst games of the season, like in every game against the Bulls this year. So I'm curious to see if that happens once again. We'll see if do we know Caruso. What's his status? Do we know for tomorrow?
He's questionable for Friday.
Questionable again for Alex Caruso. So we will see. Obviously, if he does play, he'd have a lot of time on Dame. So, and then they have I believe it's a 4-game road trip out west, or 4 or 5 games, something like that. It'll be tough. But again, the Bulls have somehow found a way to win some of these improbable games and games they really shouldn't have. So we will see if they can keep that up moving forward. So that's going to do it for us here on this episode of Cash Considerations. We'll talk to you guys probably sometime next week. Take it easy, everybody.